The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Janique Sanders thought she was having a private conversation. A woman had walked into her office at UNC Charlotte asking questions about diversity, equity, and inclusion.
I'm just going to give you a real spiel about the hiding.
Please.
I have a general feeling that you're fine and that you won't go back.
This was spring 2025, just months after North Carolina had ordered its public universities to shut down their DEI programs. The woman wanted to know, was diversity work still happening on campus? Janique, then Assistant Director of Leadership and Community Engagement, spoke candidly.
So we've renamed it.
We've revised it. We've recalibrated it, so to speak.
So it's equity work is still happening on campus.
She explained that while there were no outward DEI positions at the school, there were covert opportunities.
If you're looking for like outward DEI position, not to happen.
Yeah.
But if you are interested in doing work that is covert, there are opportunities.
The word of the year, she said, is finesse. What Janique didn't know was that she was being filmed. Soon, the video would be everywhere, and she'd lose her job. I'm Margot Gray. This week on Campus Files, how universities are navigating the rise and rapid fall of diversity, equity, and inclusion.
I first got started covering higher ed when I was a reporter at my college newspaper. I always found higher ed to be this complicated space where it was a microcosm of some of our biggest debates on a really intense stage, and the politics at the same time are a lot more complicated.
This is Erin, a higher education reporter for The Assembly, a digital magazine that covers stories across North Carolina. Erin has covered all sorts of topics in higher education. Sports, finances, state politics. But lately, one topic keeps coming up, DEI, which stands for Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion.
DEI.
And DEI. And
DEI.
DEI.
It's the number of people that you have in the organization that mirror the labor force availability.
DEI isn't brand new. Its roots trace back to the civil rights movement, and over the years, it's gone by different names. Back in the 90s, for example, you might have seen a multicultural affairs center on a college campus. But strip away the changing terminology, and supporters say the mission has always been the same: to make institutions more representative, more equitable, and more welcoming for everyone.
How do we create a culture that supports a broad range of students? And that takes shape in a lot of different ways. That might be support in admission and scholarships and financial aid. It might look like, you know, identity-based student groups, helping students connect with their peers to support underrepresented groups on campuses.
For years, DEI received relatively little public attention. But recently, it's become a lightning rod in America's culture wars, especially on college campuses. And nowhere is that transformation more dramatic than in North Carolina. Not long ago, in 2019, the UNC Board of Governors, which governs all 16 public universities in the state, voted to require DEI programming at its schools. This was a group of Republican appointees voting to expand diversity work. And at the time, it barely made the news.
I remember myself like trying to look for more like information about the conversations and like the debate taking place at that time, but it really kind of seemed like an uncontroversial framework for campuses to pursue at that time.
And North Carolina's public universities were about to double down on DEI because in 2020, the murder of George Floyd sent institutions across the country scrambling. Suddenly, corporations, government agencies, and universities were all grappling with the same urgent question: how do we address systemic racism?
I was a student on campus during George Floyd, and I saw how universities reacted to that, often leaning heavily on their DEI offices and wanting to implement more resources into those offices to meet this moment. And we saw that in corporate America as well.
The tech giants are among a growing number of American companies facing a racial reckoning in the aftermath of George Floyd's killing.
From Ben & Jerry's to Band-Aid, so far companies have pledged more than $1.7 billion to advance racial justice.
I know personally that 5 years ago, they didn't want to hear words like racism, diversity, changing demographics, and yet now it's part of the everyday lexicon.
The UNC Board of Governors responded by creating a racial equity task force, which gave schools a concrete list of mandates: hire more DEI staff, expand diversity education, and ramp up inclusion efforts across campuses. North Carolina's university system was all in.
There was just a lot of discussion about race and debate about how universities in North Carolina approached their own history and how they made sure students on campus felt included.
Today, the notion of Republicans championing DEI initiatives seems unlikely, even improbable. But this wasn't that long ago. As recently as July 2021, the Board of Governors sent out a statement calling diversity and inclusion fundamental to the success of our universities and our state.
DEI really was something that there was broad consensus on, up and even as the purple state, with a Republican-led legislature and a board of trustees that at that point in time was mostly conservatives.
But by the time Aaron started covering higher education in 2023, just 2 years later, that commitment was already beginning to unravel.
The tides were beginning to shift, and this opposition started to rise, people questioning like the way universities and others were going about this, the language surrounding DEI, the muddying of the waters of what really is this work, what is a political litmus test versus what is student support. And those sorts of debates started to permeate.
Aaron started noticing something happening across the country. Anti-DEI efforts were quietly gaining momentum. Conservative think tanks were circulating what's called model legislation. These are essentially pre-written bills that outside groups draft and then hand off to lawmakers, ready-made with little need for changes. Over the years, both Democrats and Republicans have used model legislation to shape everything from gun laws to voting rights to abortion policy. In this case, the model legislation had a specific target: dismantling DEI programs in higher education. Florida and Texas were the first states to run with it.
It's always the little bit of a delay in getting to North Carolina as sort of more of a battleground purple state. But I think that sent the message that something was going to come in North Carolina for many people.
And that's exactly what happened. Before long, North Carolina lawmakers were floating the idea of an anti-DEI law, and the Board of Governors, the group in charge of the universities, was paying close attention.
And that's how a lot of policy changes seem to take shape in North Carolina, that the legislature signals they want something and the governing board responds.
The Board of Governors did just that. Before any state law was even passed, they voted to eliminate DEI programming at every public university in the state.
Breaking news, it appears that diversity and inclusion policies within the UNC system are on the chopping block.
Dozens of students tried this morning to get inside the UNC Board of Governors meeting. Space was limited, many waited outside and protested against changes to the DEI policy. This
right here is at several schools, DEI offices were shut down with no replacements. Other schools restructured existing offices, changing names and rewriting mission statements. Across the UNC system, more than $16 million previously dedicated to DEI was redirected elsewhere. What's striking is how quickly the shift happened. These programs disappeared almost as quickly as they had expanded. And in both moments, when they were built up and when they were dismantled, the momentum didn't come from inside the universities. It was driven by politics on the outside. So when Trump returned to office, you could see what was coming next. He'd campaigned on dismantling diversity programs. And on his first day back in the White House, he signed an executive order ending DEI in federal agencies.
Diversity, equity, and inclusion in the federal workplace is ending.
The Trump administration is ordering all federal employees in diversity, equity, inclusion, or DEI, all of those roles be placed on paid administrative leave by tonight.
The message resonated with North Carolina's Board of Governors. While they'd already shut down DEI programming across the state's universities, they were about to take things even further. June is here, which means it's finally time to reach for your summer wardrobe. And if you're trying to look good without overheating, Quince is your best bet. Their summer collection has all the warm weather staples: breathable linen, washable silk, and soft organic cotton. I now own their 100% linen pants in more colors than I'd like to admit. And the best part is that you get all that quality without the luxury markup. Everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Quince works directly with ethical factories and cuts out the middlemen, so you're paying for quality, not brand markup. And it's not just clothing. Quince has become a destination for elevated essentials across the home, from kitchen to bedding, making it easy to bring a more premium feel into everyday life. Elevate your summer wardrobe. Go to quince.com/campus for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/campus for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/campus. The University of North Carolina system is one of the oldest in the country. 16 universities, each with its own identity and politics. So when their DEI programs got dismantled, the fallout was different everywhere. But perhaps nowhere did it hit harder than at UNC Chapel Hill.
On the UNC Chapel Hill campus, it's kind of this bubble of like very, very liberal. I don't think it really reflects the state as a whole. We have been known as a swing state, but we have been leaning red in the past few years.
This is Reagan. She's a sophomore at UNC Chapel Hill, and she's a news editor for the student paper, The Daily Tar Heel.
There is some diversity in viewpoints there, but being on a campus that's fairly liberal with a lot of young people, it does lean blue in a way that somebody wouldn't think of when they think North Carolina.
UNC Chapel Hill leans progressive, but like every other school in the system, it's still at the mercy of state politics. Here's why. The 24 members of the Board of Governors, which sets policy for all 16 campuses, are elected by state legislatures. Schools have to follow the board's decisions or risk losing their funding, even when those decisions go against what students and faculty want.
Our administration is kind of subject to the whims of the legislature. The decisions they make affect our funding as a public university, so if we don't comply with any standards they set for us as a public institution, then our funding is subject to be taken. And I think that's where a lot of the friction and the tension has been.
That tension came to a head when the Board of Governors voted to eliminate DEI programs across its universities. At UNC Chapel Hill, these programs weren't just add-ons. They were embedded in the fabric of campus life. They shaped course requirements and even influenced hiring, where new faculty were asked to submit diversity statements. For some, the expansion went too far. Critics said it felt less like student support and more like an ideological litmus test. So when the rollback came, there was a lot to unravel. Overnight, $5.4 million was cut, 20 positions eliminated, and 27 reassigned.
I would say it was a massive deal to students, at least just from the perspective of a student reporter. We were finding new things to cover about it every day, like how it impacted every facet of campus and tangible impacts.
And the impact didn't stop there. It soon reached the classroom. Shortly after Trump's election, the Board of Governors issued another directive. Every campus had to eliminate any course requirements connected to diversity, equity, and inclusion. The mandate left campuses scrambling. Take UNC Chapel Hill. Students there were required to complete a general education requirement called Power, Difference, and Inequality, with hundreds of courses to choose from. Overnight, the university had to find a workaround. Professors rushed to scrub DEI language from their syllabi. and administrators rebranded the requirement itself. Power difference and inequality became power in society. I asked Reagan how much that would actually change things.
I don't think that we are completely erasing anything to do with any topic like race theory or anything. Mentioning women in gender studies, I think it's just trying to rename things and be more intentional and like explain to the higher ups, like, this is why I'm teaching this. This is why this matters. This is not garbage.
In other words, even with the ban in place, DEI topics weren't disappearing entirely from required courses. And Reagan says they weren't vanishing from campus life either. That reality, that DEI work was still visible, frustrated some critics. And one group in particular took notice: Accuracy in Media.
They call themselves, I believe, undercover journalists or investigators, and they kind of like market themselves as a watchdog organization.
Accuracy in Media was founded in 1969 by economist Reid Irvine, who believed mainstream outlets were plagued by liberal bias. From the beginning, he took a unique approach, writing letters to editors to call out what he saw as slanted coverage. And if his letters weren't published, he'd simply pay for an ad space and run them himself. Over the years, the group has championed a range of issues, from defending the Vietnam War to denying the impact of climate change. And their playbook has evolved. What began with letters and editorials has shifted into what they now call undercover journalism.
And they go into these public universities, cameras kind of on them but hidden, and they pose as either a student or somebody just curious about what formerly was DEI at the university. And they ask people, primarily I think whose positions had been realigned post the DEI ban, is there still equity work being done? That type of thing.
Reagan had seen their videos exposing faculty doing DEI work in Texas and Florida, states where bans against DEI had also gone into effect. She figured it was only a matter of time before Accuracy in Media set their sights on North Carolina. And she was right. On May 28, 2025, the group released a video featuring Janique Sanders, the UNC Charlotte faculty member we heard about at the start of the episode.
If you're looking for like a outward DEI position, not have to happen.
Yeah.
But if you are interested in doing work that is covered, there are opportunities.
Then came a video of Megan Pugh, Dean of Students at UNC Asheville, caught on camera saying she loves breaking rules and continuing DEI efforts.
She was caught on video reportedly implying that the university was not in compliance with DEI restrictions.
Soon after, another video surfaced, this time of a faculty member at Western Carolina University.
So the work is still occurring very much here at Western. You just might see it called different things.
Then another video from UNC Wilmington. In both cases, the faculty members admitted that DEI work hadn't stopped. It was just happening under different names. And Accuracy in Media wasted no time sharing those findings with the public.
As our investigation into North Carolina's public university system continues, Accuracy in Media has once again uncovered staff openly defying the state's ban on DEI. Previously, we exposed...
The videos were out. Faculty were exposed. The question now, what would the schools do about it?
University of North Carolina in Charlotte, an administrator just got exposed. DEI's banned, but that's not stopping the assistant director of leadership and community engagement from sneaking DEI into the curriculum.
In the now viral video, she suggests the school was skirting the state's ban on DEI programs.
We reached out to the school for comment on the undercover DEI, and they said this: the employee's statements were inaccurate and do not reflect UNC Charlotte's actions.
In June 2025, the Accuracy in Media videos took North Carolina by storm. Republican politicians and policymakers in the state cited them as proof that DEI work was still happening and that universities were openly flouting the rules. North Carolina Senate leader Phil Berger tweeted, "DEI, no matter what name or acronym you use, doesn't belong in education." The universities responded quickly. Within days, three of the four employees caught on camera were out of their jobs, though it's still unclear whether they were fired or pressured to resign. The fourth employee was placed under investigation. Here's Aaron again.
I think what was interesting was the speed at which this happened. I think faculty were extremely skeptical that you could have an investigation that was thorough and fair hours after a video emerges and now they're no longer employed at an institution.
The school's response, Aaron says, has contributed to an atmosphere of fear among faculty, in part because even when faculty want to follow the rules, there's still widespread confusion about what those rules actually mean. For example, universities understand that they need to drop DEI-related graduation requirements. But the rules around major specific requirements are much less clear. Let's say you're an English major focusing on British and American literature. Are you no longer required to take a course in multi-ethnic literature?
Is that something that had to be changed, or is that exempt because students don't have to take that major? They don't have to take English at all. They don't even have to choose that concentration.
Consider social work students, for example. To become a licensed social worker in North Carolina, you have to pass a state exam that includes diversity and inclusion topics. But under the new rules, undergraduates may no longer be required to take the very courses that cover those topics. Here's how one top official described what it's like navigating these new rules.
The faculty assembly chair, Wade, said the current environment is like you're driving on the road, you know there's a lot of police officers around, but you don't know the speed limit. And the speed limit's not posted anywhere, so you're just trying not to be the fastest car on the road. It creates really just a challenging place for faculty to navigate. Everyone trying to look at what everyone else is doing to judge where they should be.
Without clear guidance, some professors are acting preemptively, trying to stay ahead of potential penalties.
We've heard anecdotal evidence that faculty in general were looking at their syllabi, maybe examining some of the language in their courses, in their descriptions, trying to think about the words today that are really falling under this broader umbrella of DEI that are drawing scrutiny. Even in things like grants, we've heard of people just on their own, not even being pushed by the university or anything to examine this, wanting to sort of preemptively avoid scrutiny or just maybe try to take some of the potential heat off of them.
So I think a lot of people just had that concern of like, how do these courses continue in this era?
After all, if you're a department chair, why prioritize a class that's no longer required and is under scrutiny by the Board of Governors? Students worry this logic could eventually lead to the dismantling of entire departments.
One story that sticks out in particular is at UNC Charlotte, there was a student who didn't finish her degree. She started in like the 1980s, but never finished her degree in Africana Studies. She decided to return in this past year to finish her degree because she thought that this degree might not be offered much longer. And I think that's really telling that in this moment where we haven't heard much specifics about how these disciplines and programs are being impacted, that students in particular are taking this to mean that the system is maybe walking back support for these disciplines and programs.
Still, the UNC system says there's nothing to worry about and that nothing has changed.
The UNC system has tried to say that they're just not mandating students to take classes, but these classes aren't going away. So academic freedom is not restricted. That's sort of the UNC system's argument that the content still exists. Faculty students can still learn and teach this content.
At UNC Chapel Hill, the Dean of Undergraduate Education said, "Professors' academic freedom remains untouched, and students continue to enjoy a fantastic variety of course choices. No one should worry that their education has been compromised in any way." But with faculty already changing course titles and removing DEI language from syllabi, many on campus aren't convinced. And Aaron suspects the pressure to avoid diversity topics has only grown since the firings that followed the accuracy in media videos.
Even though people knew this group existed and that these critics were out there, it's much different to see it come to your home state or see your colleague impacted or see your campus being included in these videos and the impacts of that on individual employees. It's the fear, it's the chilling effect.
And that chilling effect could soon grow stronger. In late June, just a few weeks after the accuracy in media videos, the Board of Governors quietly introduced a new policy. It requires each campus to set up a committee to evaluate its compliance with the anti-DEI policy.
So now members from the university's Board of Trustees will evaluate how their schools have implemented DEI-related policies and changes. And the UNC system did not announce this in a public way. It was just posted at the bottom of a webpage that we just stumbled upon, basically.
To determine whether DEI has truly been eliminated, the new compliance committees are examining everything, from mission statements and course descriptions to the way staff are trained. Their first reports went to the Board of Governors on September 1st. And the stakes are high. Faculty who are deemed to be non-compliant could be called before the chancellor and the Board of Trustees. Their jobs are on the line. And for students, the future of what can be taught hangs in the balance. Campus Files is an Odyssey original podcast. This episode was written and reported by Margot Gray. Campus Files is produced by Ian Mont, Elliot Adler, and me, Margot Gray. Our executive producers and story editors are Maddie Sprunkheiser and Lloyd Lockridge. Campus Files is edited, mixed, and mastered by Chris Basil and Andy Jaskowitz. Special thanks to Jenna Weiss-Berman, J.D. Crowley, Leah Reese-Dennis, Maura Curran, Josephina Francis, Kurt Courtney, Hilary Schuff, Sean Cherry, Laura Berman, and Hilary Van Ornum. Original theme music by James Waterman and Davey Sumner. If you have tips or story ideas, write to us at campusfilespod@gmail.com.
Hey, it's Anna Sale, host of Death, Sex, and Money, the show from Slate about the things we think about a lot and need to talk about more. Many of us have something going on behind closed doors, like a listener we called Elizabeth, who told us she's a hoarder.
I see mess beyond probably what most people think of when they think of mess.
We'll work through it all together on Death, Sex, and Money. Listen wherever you get podcasts.